Irish girl who was expelled from school because she'd written a paper about Walt Whitman, alleging that he was a revolutionary and gay, Reynolds recalls. So she goes back to work in her father's Irish bar, and in the second act there's a death and a funeral, and Eisner insisted that a life-size coffin be placed on the bar. Eisner's play drew a sizable local audience, and Reynolds says he sat there watching and thought, "Wow, this guy has gone and written a play." Many years later, Reynolds had a play of his own produced at an off-Broadway theater. Eisner booked a $35 seat in the front row to accommodate his long legs. Afterwards, he sent Reynolds a note saying how great it was that, after all these years, things are working out for you as a writer. Eisner also gave $5,000 to the theater. After years of all-boys schools, attractive young women surrounded Eisner at Denison. He gave the starring role in his Walt Whitman play to Barbara Eberhardt, a budding actress he was hoping to date. That gambit failed, but he soon met his first serious girlfriend, Judy Armstrong from Hamilton, Ohio, who embodied the all-American virtues that had drawn Eisner to Denison. By the time he graduated in 1964, he and Armstrong were pinned, a serious step just short of engagement. Eisner moved to Paris to explore the glamorous existence of a young expatriate playwright, but he didn't stay long, moving back to Park Avenue with his parents before getting his own apartment on 64th Street. Armstrong had stayed in Ohio. Michael's Christmas gift to her that first year after graduation was returned to him unopened. When he called to find out why, her mother answered. "I guess I should tell you," she said, "that Judy got married yesterday." Eisner was stunned. He couldn't eat anything at dinner that night. Still, he went out to a party a friend was having. He tried to turn his heartbreak into a funny story, regaling the other guests with a dramatic rendering of his rejection. One of the guests, an attractive, down-to-earth redhead from small-town Jamestown, New York, named Jane Breckenridge, listened politely, but found him self-centered and boorish. When Eisner called the next week to ask for a date, she refused. He persisted. After repeatedly spurning Eisner's requests, she relented and agreed to go to the theater with him. They were married in 1967. Paramount had produced such legendary critical and box office hits as The Godfather films, Chinatown, and Nashville. But the studio was adrift and losing money when Charles Bludorn, chairman of Paramount's owner, Gulf and Western, named Barry Diller the studio's chairman in 1974. He and Eisner had worked together at ABC, and Diller hired Eisner as president 2 years later. "I hear you've really matured as an executive," Diller said wryly. "You even return your phone calls." Though they were the same age, Diller had ranked above Eisner at ABC, and their relationship was a mixture of competitiveness, wariness, and mutual admiration from the start, honed during the period that Diller produced movies for ABC's Movie of the Week, and Eisner worked under him as director of feature films and development. ABC's movies became a hugely successful feature under Diller, and Eisner eventually rose to head of primetime programming of ABC, responsible for such hits as Welcome Back, Cotter, Happy Days, and Laverne and Shirley. Eisner seemed to have a sixth sense for American popular taste. Though he liked to quote Willa Cather and Shakespeare and mention that he had been a literature major in college, it was Diller who never